This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Mike Somich on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Sharp Money, Mike Somich. I'm Patrick Maher. Did you enjoy divisional weekend? If you're me, you did not, because I couldn't have been more off on those four games. But let's get into it, Mike. VSIN, the sports betting network. Download. Appreciate all your support. Let's get into it. 4-0 for the favorites, 3-1 ATS over the weekend, the two on Saturday, two on Sunday. Coming out of it, the theme for you was what?
Moneyline parlays did well. Everyone who put that moneyline parlay in there did great. Theme for me is either the defenses are really good or the quarterbacks kind of stink this year, because we did not get very good quarterback play in this round. I want to say that I want to give credit to the defenses, right? I think Houston made Drake May look a little bad. I think CJ Stroud kind of did it to himself. But the quarterback play in the NFL, little rough for the divisional round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I would say that as far as New England, because I'm just taking a look at the numbers right now, and they've been bet up to 5.5 at Denver. Obviously, we'll get into it. No Bo Nix, so that means Stidham is going to be starting. I do think that's a little rich for a team that was given the ball 5 or 6 times against Houston and literally could do nothing with it. I would say New England-Denver as an AFC championship matchup might be the worst we've ever seen.
Compare it to a juice, right? There's apple juice, there's orange juice, there's all these juices, right? And we talk about there's a juice to a game. I mean, this is like, what, sugar-free lemonade? Like, this is like the most watered-down thing I've ever seen. There is no juice in this game. And I'm glad we at least have Seahawks-Rams on the other side. That's got juice. We get a third matchup. That's going to be a lot of fun. This New England-Denver game, man. I mean, I guess it's better than Houston-Denver, but this New England-Denver game is not going to be great.
No, I'm not looking forward to it, but we are because it is football. All right, let's back up. Let's go through it. We started off with the Bills at the Broncos. The Broncos, a 33-30 winner in overtime. Obviously, Denver does cover the 1.5. It goes well over the 45.5. On the back end of this, one thing that I did get right, obviously, Sean McDermott was fired. The idea that people are like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that. What are they watching? What are you doing? This is 9 years of blowing fourth quarter leads with Josh Allen in the postseason. Of course he was going to get fired, and water is wet. However, let's get into the game. Big takeaway here, 33-30 with Denver. What do you got?
I do want to talk about the McDermott thing once we talk about the game, because I am shocked by one thing around the Sean McDermott side of it. We'll talk about that after.
Sure.
This was one of the most frustrating games of football I think I've ever watched, Patrick, because you got like C minus Josh Allen here. He did not play well in this spot. Like, and the interceptions, the fumbles, like the fumble at the end of the first half was rookie year, second year Josh Allen, where like Brian Daboll's hitting him with a newspaper over the head saying, stop it. Like, to try and get those turnovers out of him. You flip it around the other side. I don't know what Sean Payton was doing. I have no freaking clue what Sean Payton was doing on the offensive side. This is a Buffalo Bills team that's 30th in EPA against the run. They had 4 runs by their running backs in the first half. They ended the game with like 11 runs between the two running backs. You could have just run the ball down Buffalo's throat, and yet you're dropping back Bo Nix to throw the ball 50 times, running 11 more. Like, this was malpractice from a game plan perspective from Sean Payton. The worst game plan I've seen in the playoffs since Harbaugh and Monken put together that game plan for the Ravens against the Chiefs in the AFC title game a few years back. I mean, that was this bad. They survived because they got bad Josh Allen, but I don't know what we were doing from a Denver perspective on the offensive side of the football. They're going to have a lot better game plan next week against New England, especially with Jared Stidham starting in that run defense to be able to move on.
What I would say is Peyton may perform better because he might be handicapped by the fact that he's playing a backup quarterback and just go fundamentals, right? They're going to have to with Stidham. There's not in regardless. I think he's got 5 starts in his career. I'm not even putting anything on Stidham here. He's being thrown into it. But you're obviously going to have a lot of running back screens, run the football, and rely on what the narrative was coming into the year for Denver, which is this defense. So my assumption would be that. But let's back up to Allen. Impossible to be worse. I said if I trusted anybody going into these 4 games, it would be Allen. I am gobsmacked by how badly he played. It's not just the 2 picks. He fumbled the ball 3 times. He lost 2 of them, as you mentioned, at the end of the first half. I mean, he had yippee situation going on a la, you know, CJ Stroud.
He also missed throws.
Ooh,
he missed Dawson Knox. He missed another one in overtime that he really should have made. Like, I'm not going to say it was like his worst game because he also made plays that were sprinkled in there. But this was like circa rookie year Josh Allen. We got a time warp back to the past and saw all the mistakes, all the inaccuracies throwing the football. And you just can't do that when you have the rest of the supporting cast you've got in Buffalo. They're not a good football team, but they have Josh Allen. That's how they got to this point. Well, they had rookie Josh Allen yesterday, and they still almost able to beat this Denver team because of the mess that Denver was in this game as well. But look, I mean, you got to say this is on Josh Allen. We talked about it before the playoffs started. No Mahomes, no Jackson, no Burrow, no AFC title for Josh Allen. He had to get through it. He had to find a way to get through it. And if he had played, what, his B game, they win this by 10 points?
Oh, Mike, like, they dominated time of possession. They ran. If I told you that Buffalo was going to dominate time of possession, they were going to run for 183 yards. That was Cook's best game of the year. If they were going to run for 183 yards, you'd say they're going to win the football game. But like you said, you got a C-minus performance from Allen. Unbelievable.
It was shocking because, like you said, this is the one guy we trusted. If you could rank the trust rankings, trust tree in the playoffs, Allen is one,
easy.
Stafford is two, and then there's a drop off to everybody else, right? And like this was, we'll get to Stafford later. Don't worry. This was a bad effort from Josh Allen, and like I was blown away watching this football game, especially the fourth quarter, because you got to a point in this game where you're like, they're still in this. There's still a chance for Buffalo to win. He's going to flip the switch. And he kind of flipped the switch. They got the lead, but then they kind of gave it up. And then in overtime, obviously, the switch wasn't on there. All right, we got to talk about the three controversial plays at the end. I need the Patrick Maher opinion.
Yeah, let's go.
Was it an interception in overtime?
In real time. So I don't want to do the – I watched a million replays. In real time, I said he got the ball, and the ball got ripped out on the ground. Watching slow motion, I think you could argue the ball was coming loose. Maybe he didn't have full security. In my estimation, and you can give me your answer, I think that had to be called a catch on the field.
Ooh, I think it was 100% an interception.
Okay.
I never thought he had possession of the football, right? Like, because it was moving around as he's going down. You've got two hands by the Denver player on there. The ball wasn't ripped out. It was kind of bumbling around, and Denver just ended up with it, right? So it had to be either an interception or a catch. No way it can be a completion. Never touched the ground. I thought it was an interception from the jump. I thought they got the ball right.
Okay. What's the second?
I will say this, though. Allen missed his receiver the play before for like 30 yards down the field. Had he hit that receiver, wouldn't have mattered.
He missed two of his biggest throws of his career.
Yes.
It could have ended the game.
The Knox throw was terrible. And then
the Knox throw. Yeah. He'll make that. He makes that hungover.
Yeah.
Like, it's really unfathomable. What's number two?
Number two, pass interference at the end of the game. Right. The first pass interference was maybe not, but it doesn't matter because Bosa roughed the passer. So that penalty is irrelevant.
Yeah,
what you think about it. The second pass interference, was that PI or not?
It was not. And I will just say this, based on how the game was being officiated, because if you reverse it and go back the other way, Denver was doing the exact same thing. And I said, fine, don't call it. If you're going to call it that way, and then you come back and now you're seeing the yellow flag. I had an issue with it.
So here's the thing. Letter of the law.
Yes.
I agree with you. I disagree with you. I think it's pass interference.
I agree.
The way they called that football game, I was very surprised the flag came out. And I hate, with a capital H, hate pass interference calls when the ball is underthrown. Like, what's the DB supposed to do? He's running full speed down the field. The receiver's running full speed. The receiver's going to see the football. Of course he's going to slow down and stop. You shouldn't reward underthrown footballs, badly thrown footballs, with 30-yard penalties. They just have to figure out a way to get rid of that in the offseason, in my mind, because it's a huge issue in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think your point is the one that I want to pick up on. In the nature of the game, the spirit of the game, you can't make those calls against Buffalo, but letter of the law, they were pass interferences. But every game is its own vehicle. And in that game, it wasn't being officiated the way it was punitively against the Bills towards the end of the game. That would be my answer.
You look back at like Cook, that was pass interference on James Cook on that play. Like, there were other pass interferences that went
Correct.
By the wayside, and I didn't think this was the most egregious one. And like, I'm not a fan of like, well, it's the game's on the line. You can't throw the flag. You have to throw the flag. To me, you should throw the flag if you've been throwing the flag. If you've not been throwing the flag, you don't throw the flag. The moment of the game should not adjust the way that you call the game.
100%. Was there a third or was that the third?
That was those were the two. I mean, the other one was the pass interference, which happened a little earlier. But, you know, I think that, again, Bosa's penalty would have superseded that had there not been a pass interference.
Yeah, and that's a 10-plus year vet that can't be – Bosa's a clown. You can't be doing that. Saturday night, and this is props to you, 41-6 Seattle. You were all over the handicap here. San Francisco was never in the game. Just complete dominance by the Seattle defense. He didn't really need much from Darnold. This was domination from start to finish for Seattle here. And it obviously opens up with the kickoff for the touchdown, which is, you know, really an ominous sign for the 49ers of what was to come.
Yeah, Shaheed to the house, right, to start out. Yeah, this is Saturday was fun. Sunday was frustrating from a betting perspective. We hit both props in the early game on Saturday. The 45-1 parlay we talked about here, Patrick.
Yeah.
That hit.
Almost.
If you had played it on a book that gave you protection from Charbonnet, because he got injured in the first half, he got protection on a couple books. So I was happy to wake up and log in and see that I got a piece of that cash there, which was a little bit fun. But everything else got home. Defensive touchdown, the Seattle alt, the whole deal. This is just a dominant defense. Like, I don't – and it's, you feel bad for San Francisco because the injuries just kept coming for him. We saw McCaffrey in and out of this game. Tun just hurt himself. This was just a situation where they were overwhelmed by what Seattle had on both the offensive and defensive side, but specifically that defense. Like, they're just a really, really, really good football team, Patrick. And if Sam Darnold isn't making mistakes, good luck beating this Seattle Seahawks team.
Yeah, and speaking of Darnold, I mean, 17 attempts, he was efficient, but really this was Kenneth Walker. 116 on 19. If the run game's cooking for this Seattle team, it's a Super Bowl champ. I mean, there's just really no other way around it because the defense is that good. Obvious to me, the best defense, it's not even close, remaining with Houston being bounced. You know, Darnold, 12 of 17. He had a touchdown. He didn't turn the ball over, which was important. And then on the other side, like your handicap said, you know, no options for Purdy. And Purdy was not good in the game, but really didn't have much to work with here.
He had no prayer. I just constantly under pressure, constantly being harassed by that offensive or defensive line that was getting home with four. You had good coverage on the back end. Pearsall was playing banged up. You didn't have Kittle. Jennings made one play out there, but I don't know what San Francisco was supposed to be able to do. It was a repeat of week 18. We talked about how there weren't a lot of ways that San Francisco could adjust their scheme to be able to get around what happened in week 18. We mentioned the run game, 180 yards in week 18 for the running backs there for Seattle. They were able to, the Seattle able to run it again. This game felt like it was over when it was 10-0. Like, it just in a blink, 100%. It felt like it was over. But Kim, by the way, what the hell was that 4th-and-1 play with Juszczyk running the option to Christian McCaffrey?
See, like, this is why I've always been down on Shanahan. Whether it be Atlanta, two Super Bowls with fourth quarter leads, there's always he's not McVay. McVay is not, he is not going to be running a Juszczyk option on 4th-and-1 when, if you don't get that, the game is officially over. You know what I mean? That was so early, but the momentum, they needed that.
To the wrong side, the short side of the field. And it's funny because we're like, you know what? Shanahan is going to be in his bag. He's going to reach into Patrick's pocket, take the bag out of Patrick's pocket. He took the trick plays way deeper than I thought he would. But sometimes the best thing to do is not run trick plays. And that was one of those situations where, like, look, Juszczyk has pitched the football maybe once in his career. You're 4th-and-1 in Seattle in a huge moment early in the game. Maybe just drop back in shotgun and run the play you did before the timeout that worked. I don't know.
Or how about put Juszczyk behind Purdy's ass and push him for a yard. Yeah. And if you can't get it, you don't deserve to win the football game. Just no time for trickery.
Run the dive. Just hand it to Juszczyk in the fullback. There are so many other things you could do. That was one of those head-scratcher moments. And then Seattle gets a field goal, gets a turnover. All of a sudden, 17-0, that game is over.
Yeah, that game, there's nothing to say. Dominance by Seattle. Patriots return to the AFC title game for the first time in 7 years. And boy, do they deserve it, that fan base. 28-16. Over the Texans, and all I can say is I have no clue outside of a great, not good, great defense how it was only 28-16. Stroud continued with the yips from Pittsburgh. impossible to be worse in the game. He did have a nice touchdown pass, to be fair. Outside of that, Stroud, 20 of 47, four interceptions. They couldn't run the ball. Marks and Chubb did nothing on the ground. And this was really just about the turnovers and the Patriots' inability to capitalize on said turnovers.
Yeah, it was. This is one of those, like, I was comparing this to an art, a piece of art, right? Where it's this abstract piece of art, and some people find it beautiful, some people find it hideous. That's what this football game was. It was a Salvador Dali. He's the famous one, right?
the melting clock.
Yeah, this was like a Dali painting in a football game. Because I will say this. We were sitting there with 5 minutes left in the third quarter. There have been eight turnovers. I was entertained.
I was entertained.
I found the game fun despite being absolutely hideous. Will C.J. Stroud be able to finish the game? Are they going to bring in Davis Mills? I thought it was interesting. Like, how many times is Drake May just going to, like, hold the football up until somebody hits, knocks it out of his hand and fumbles? This was cinema. It was not a well-played football game, but it was highly entertaining. To the Pats fans who said, we've got three clean drives on this Texans defense and scored three touchdowns, Just slow your roll. The first touchdown drive was a touchdown on a 4th-and-1 where the ball was tipped and your receiver caught it and ran into the end zone. That's kind of fugazi. Let's just be honest, right? The final touchdown drive took one of the best catches we've seen in playoff history from Boudé down the sideline where he tips it to himself.
And all
that
time.
Defense was exhausted, by the way, at that point as well. You had one. You had one touchdown drive against this Texans defense. And if not for C.J. Stroud, you would be sitting at home next week. It would be Texans Broncos.
Oh, first off, the Boudé catch is an all-timer.
It was incredible. I have no idea.
Literally all-time. And the coverage was great.
Yes.
A tired defense. I would not be excited if I'm a Patriot. First off, congrats to the Patriots. What a turnaround. Not taking anything away from them. This was not good. There is no way to actually put lipstick on a pig where you're getting advantageous yardage on those turnovers. It's not like they were always backed up. A couple of times on the turnovers, yes, but there were opportunities. You pick up 10 yards, at least get a field goal. You mentioned it, and Dre always holds on to the ball. He took bad sacks, 5 sacks in the game. And yes, it's a great defense, so we got to be fair. I don't know how Houston's defense even has a conversation with the offensive side of the ball after that game.
I mean, we'll have a fun Texans talk once we finish talking about the game.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, go for it.
How about this? How about when you're in the opportunity to go to the championship game and you're Houston, how about you don't give up on a football game? And it's probably been discussed ad nauseum.
Yeah.
The punt from Ryans. Anybody pretending to defend it, you've lost your mind. It's the same as Tomlin's punt in the wild card weekend. They're waving the white flag. There is just no other way to present that.
Yeah, look, I realize it's 4th-and-18.
Doesn't matter.
Just try and get pass interference. Throw it up there. Send it down the sideline. It's a two touchdowns. You have one timeout left because you burned two on the offensive side of the ball in the second half already. It was a cowardly punt. It was a give up punt.
Oh, totally.
And it's like, I think he actually felt bad for the defense. He's like, I don't want to put him out there on a short field again. Let's just punt it away. So this stays at that 28-16. C.J. Stroud played that might be the worst game of football I've ever seen in a divisional round.
I actually do feel badly. He's going through some mental stuff. He looked crestfallen, and it only got worse. And he was mentally fraught. I felt badly for him. I'm going to be straight up.
I will give some blame to the OC here, too. Because the first, the pick six, right, which was atrocious decision, just take the sack, right? They're running play action, okay? They couldn't run the football all day. Play action wasn't working. But they're not only running play action, they're running play action where he turns his back to the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a quarterback who's clearly not locked in, the worst thing you can do is have him turn his back to the defense and then spin around when you have a crappy offensive line that's giving up pressure every play and try and figure out where he needs to deliver the football. Because you're forcing him to read and process the information significantly faster than if you just let him drop back in the shotgun and sling it out there, right? And there were some terrible throws. Like, he missed out routes. He was throwing behind the defender on out routes, which is like the cardinal sin of playing football in the NFL. But the number of times you're running play action with his back to the pocket, I mean, it was atrocious from an offensive perspective.
And we knew Nico Collins, obviously a big miss, but once Schultz went down, he just didn't really have anything.
Mm-hmm.
I got to be fair. I mean, he may not be moving forward. He might not be the answer, but he was mentally out of it. The game plan wasn't great, and the injuries. Again, I don't really have anything to say about Houston. This, to me, is more about the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, well, the Patriots march on, so they're going to be the story. And they are, based on the number, the likely Super Bowl representative here from the AFC. Feels like it's a year or two too early from an actual talent perspective on that Patriots team. But we'll see what happens there in the NFC title game and who they're going to likely face if they are able to get past Denver. So fascinating setup here for this Denver-Patriots game. I wouldn't be shocked if Denver wins the football game. Like, I do think that this isn't just a slam dunk Patriot situation. I do want to talk Texans a little bit. Two questions. First sports talk radio question. Right now, redraft, CJ Stroud or Bryce Young?
Oof.
Because there was so much discourse about this that it had to be CJ Stroud year.
I think the one thing that you do see from Bryce Young, I think there might be a little bit more, how do I say this kindly, mental fortitude. With Bryce Young.
Yes,
You are seeing a person be sapped of their confidence in CJ Stroud.
So are you Bryce Young then? Is that what I'm hearing?
I think you're forcing me to start a franchise tomorrow?
Tomorrow. With 3 years of NFL information. Bryce Young or CJ Stroud?
It was damning. Pittsburgh and New England, I have to go Bryce Young.
I do too, and I can't believe I'm saying that. Like, that is ridiculous at how far we've fallen. Second question. What do you do with C.J. Stroud? You have a generational defense that has maybe 2 years of a window left. Are you willing to let C.J. Stroud be your quarterback for those 2 years, or do you try and fix this in the offseason?
I think you have a defensive-minded coach who Aikman said during – and Aikman will be honest, and he was pretty honest. He said, I don't think as though Stroud has been supported the way with which he should be. So I think you have to go into next year with Stroud as your starter, and you have to surround him with much better support than he's been given.
Yeah, I mean, you need an offensive line, right? I think that's the first thing. You added two wide receivers in last year's draft. You need to figure out this offensive line. And then I guess you move forward with Stroud, but he... I don't know, man. Like, send Stroud up to Minnesota. Let's let him go up there. Like, give me someone back, and give me Kyler Murray in Houston. Like, let's have a little spice here, because I think there's some fun moves that you could see in the offseason if teams.
What about Stroud or JJ McCarthy? What would you do?
Oh, God.
To me, it's easy. I'd take Stroud.
I would take Stroud over McCarthy. Stroud showed flashes his rookie year. So it's there. It's how do you get it out of him? Right. And that's been a problem for the last 2 years.
And Stroud, as a dog, beat the Chargers last year in the postseason and played well in the game.
Yeah.
So we've seen it. I think he's the type of human, when the confidence starts to drain, it gets really bad and he gets in his head. So that's what I would say. Now and you mentioned Sports Talk Radio, you join me for an hour on Fridays. I do VSiN Live on Mad Dog Sports Radio. So it's calls, 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 calls. And I told you, Mike, that it was Rams, Bears, for 15 hours last week. All people wanted to talk about was the Rams, Bears, and for good reason. This game delivered. It was a 2017 winner in overtime as the Rams survived the Caleb Williams heroics, and they walk it off with a field goal in overtime. We should probably just pause. Great game. Great coaching. Everything about that was theater. It was great.
It was a phenomenal football game. Absolutely won. I wish they gave the ball to Corum a little bit more, specifically in the first half, but that's a Mike complaint, not a, like, hey, you messed this up. I do think the Rams could have played better in the first half than they did. They played better football in the second half, but the Bears elevated in the second half as well. Better Caleb Williams fourth down throw. The 4th-and-8 last week?
No.
Or the 45-yard touchdown pass from 14 yards away this week?
I know you can't stand the kid.
No, I enjoy watching.
We're watching potential greatness.
Yeah, and except then he threw the interception and
overtime. No. He's wildly inaccurate. No. That throw he made to Kmet.
It's a 1-on-1.
I don't know how to explain it.
It's a 1-on-1. Like, the fourth and eight was a 1-on-1 throw.
In that temperature, with, you know, it's hard to push the ball. Not even seeing the receiver, kind of knowing with a sixth sense that he's back there. So he has an understanding and a grasp of the offense to enough to throw it there. But he didn't see him when he threw it. It's incredible. Regardless of what you, and again, he splits people 50-50, and I totally admit, it is a joy to watch this kid play football.
That's the thing. He is a blast to watch. He is so much fun when you actually get to see him out there. And like, I like the randomness of the overthrows and the missed throws because it really kind of draws you in. You never know. He throws the ball so confidently every time. And sometimes
he's got a gun.
Yeah, he's got a rocket. And sometimes it's 5 yards over the receiver and sometimes it like right in his chest. It looks the same every time when he's stepping into
duality.
That football.
It's the duality, Mike, with the unbelievable throw to Komet. And then the pick he threw to Curl was terrible.
Well, the overtime pick you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say DJ Moore did stop running on that route.
He did. So, but I still don't know if you can throw it there.
It's not a great decision. You can blame DJ Moore a little bit. Still not a great decision from Caleb.
Not in that spot. What I'm saying is, with every there has to be a mechanism that says that I can't. There's too much at stake. This is not the first half where maybe we get something from it. That is, if you throw that, there's a chance it gets picked and you lose the football game.
Best Bears season since the Super Bowl appearance?
With easily.
Right?
And also just the vibes. I mean, you know, Johnson is the greatest I've ever seen call plays. I said that when he was coaching the Lions, and I know people are like, recency bias. I don't care what you think about recency. Go Mike Martz, go Bill Walsh, go whatever you want. I'll take Ben Johnson.
I have a text thread with 4 Bears fans. That text thread was blowing up last night. Like my wife, who's not a huge football fan, she gave an oh my god to the 4th and 4 throw. Like it was transcendent through time and space how good that 4th and 4 throw was.
Well, your answer though, that one or the 4th and 13 against the Packers? They're both literally all timers.
I think physically, the 4th and 8 against the Packers was more impressive. Because
across the body,
he was
30 yards in the air.
He jumped up, he turns his body, throws it backward in a dime on 4th and 8. And it's 4th and 4 one. That awesome. Hey, don't run back 30 yards, bro. And then like it was kind of just to throw it up and hope. Great play. Not that like, but to me, the 4th and 8 was more of a skill throw. The 4th and 4 was more of a I'm just super athletic and I got lucky throw. Right.
But. I will say he is touched by God. The way it just landed perfectly in Komet's hands. Yeah. How did he put touch on it?
I don't know. I don't know if he saw him. I don't know. Like, I have no idea if he knew he was even back there. And that's why I like the 4th and 8 throw more. The 4th and 8 throw, that was a extend the play skill throw. The 4th and 4 throw, we got to be honest, there's a little bit of luck involved.
Okay,
there.
Fair. What I do like about
better moment, 4th and 4 throw. Oh, not even close.
Like, if you're there at the game and that throw lands in Komet's hands, you'll never experience anything like that again.
Should they have gone for 2?
No.
I agree. I think the hyperbole is all results based on Twitter, on X.
I thought Johnson was going for 2.
Ooh. I mean, he is one of the people I would not be shocked if he had done it.
You can't. No. You can't do that. That's not fair to your team. It's a 60-40 prop. You got to give the defense have been playing well. Mm-hmm. You have to give everybody an opportunity there.
Yeah, I agree with you. Especially since you've run so many 4th down plays, like you've kind of emptied the book on what your good stuff is already.
Yeah, so maybe
we just take it into overtime.
Conversely, the Rams, not great from Stafford. If we're being fair, Williams was probably the star running the football. You mentioned probably should have gave the ball to Corum more. The Bears, that's another thing why I love Johnson. They're always going to outrush you. They don't have the skill offensively, but they ran for 160 yards to the Rams 111. So dedicated to the run is Johnson. What was your take on the Rams overall here?
I think Stafford's more hurt than he's letting on. I think that finger's more of a problem. I don't remember Stafford being that inaccurate, missing open receivers, not sure. Hooking up with Nacua in the way that he has all season long. So I have a little concern around his finger. I thought that there was not a great first half game plan. I thought that like the first drive from the Rams, they just marched down the football field, but they were running the football quite a bit. Second drive, 3 and out, all passes. Third drive, 1 run, 4 passes, punt the ball again. Like I didn't love how they kind of moved away from what I felt their real advantages, which was on the running game. Once they got that established again in the second half, all of a sudden they started moving the football again. So I was a little surprised at the first half game plan from McVay, and that they kind of allowed the Bears to have the momentum because they didn't just take the crowd out of it and run the football. other than that, I thought they played well. That, but I do think Stafford is more injured than everyone's betting on.
I mean, the concept, he probably had a banged up back. We know he had a banged up back. Whether or not he was going to even play this year, the one human that's ever played football, if he is injured, that won't say anything is Matthew Stafford. So you're not going to hear any excuses.
When, and he hit the finger after being 8 for 8 last week and then went 2 for his next 16 or something like that. That clearly was affecting him, right? That's not just a bad streak. That is an injury. And then you saw it again in the cold today where just not as accurate. Now you've got to go up to Seattle. We'll see what the weather's like there next week. Against that defense, you cannot play like that and win.
Let's just appreciation. Let's not pick these two apart. Rams 20, Bears 17. They do cover the number. Cold, obviously, but you couldn't have a more even game. First downs were even. Time of possession was even. The two best coaches in football. Everything about the game was just like, let's just leave it there and enjoy it for what it was. Can't pick them apart like the Patriots not taking advantage of the turnovers. Can't pick it apart like Sean Payton being a donk. Can't do anything with it.
This, in my estimation, this is a different level of picking apart, right? You're nitpicking. With the Rams.
Yes, correct.
You're nitpicking with the
Others
Bears.
Others are obvious.
With the Patriots and with the Broncos, you're just like, this was bad. Like, it's not, and it's very easy to see it as well. It's not like this is, you know, pulling something that no one has talked about before, because they were just a different level of team. And that's why, like, I've been looking all day for an NFC number. If I can get NFC -2.5 in the Super Bowl, I'll just back up the Brinks truck. Like, I don't care which one, the Rams or the Seahawks against the Broncos or the Pats. It should be at least over a field goal, no matter who is in that game.
Well, Sean Payton is not Sean McVay or Ben Johnson. No. That is, he does not belong in the same combo, even though he probably thinks he does. Let's go to open up these numbers here. Open a 5 for New England, 4.5, 5. It is, it has jumped up to 5.5 with no Bo Nix. It's going to be Stidham. I genuinely believe that number is crazy, and I will be betting Denver.
I would wait then, Patrick.
Because you might get a 6.
I think you might get a 7. I don't think this stops. The question is when the buyback is. The public will not bet Denver. Will not bet Denver.
That's fair.
Period, end of story. Like, zero chance that you've got this Patriots narrative, a public team, taking on the backup quarterback. Like, Denver is going to not take money, unless it's sharp money, unless it's pro money. And then the question is, does that pro money come in at 6? Does it come in at 6.5? I thought they were going to open the 6.5. Because I thought the liability on the Denver or on the New England side was going to build up too big, and they decided to open at 4.5. I immediately bet 4.5. Now it's at 5.5. I'm hoping I can get 7 and just try and middle this thing. That's my plan.
Chris Andrews, who's a legend and he runs the book at the South Point, he tweeted, "We're 4.5. I'm seeing 5.5s. I think both are too heavy."
I don't disagree. I just don't think that the market is going to agree.
I totally agree with you.
Right?
If I get a 6.5, maybe 7 would be an insane amount of buyback. If I get a 6.5, which is above the key number of 6, I will take it. New England should win the game. Don't know what else to say, but I just was not impressed against Houston.
I mean, here's the thing. The big question here, and this is, we've talked about this during the regular season. What is the downgrade from Bo Nix to Jared Stidham? And that is a very hard number to quantify for two reasons. First off, what do you think of Bo Nix, right? Secondly, we've only seen Jared Stidham start 5 games. He's won 1 game in the NFL. He's a highly paid backup quarterback. Remember 2 years ago, we thought might be the starter when he got the contract?
The irony is McDaniels, who's running the offense for New England, loves Stidham. Thought he was a starter with the Rams. So, excuse me, the Raiders. People believe in Stidham.
Yes.
I think there's also the Hostetler angle where there's a little bit of juice and, he's going to go into this game riding on a different plane than he's ever felt before. You get that adrenaline going. I don't know if that's a huge downgrade, honestly.
Yeah.
And Nix was good in the game. Nix had a couple of big throws.
Well, Nix's legs, I think, are the biggest difference. You're not going to get
Stidham can run a little bit.
Yeah, but you're not going to get the designed runs or the 11 carries, right?
But like we said, this might be great because they're going to be forced to run the football.
Yeah, that's fair. That's true. Any interest in Jared Stidham 20-1 to win the Super Bowl MVP?
Well, like I said, Hostetler. Listen, we've seen these type of things happen. And they sign Ben DiNucci as a I don't know why, but
you got your emergency backup, your emergency backup.
Correct. I love what you're saying about the number potentially with all the public money coming, getting up to, if I see a 6.5 is where I'll jump, because maybe you'll see a 7, but it's going to be about 2 seconds.
And it would also be late because you're like, the public money generally comes later in the week, right? If we saw pro money, which is who's betting early, push this from 4.5 to 5.5, you know there's not going to be buyback at 6 likely. So then you're going to see public money come in once the weekend starts. On Friday, you're starting to see people go to Vegas. You're starting to see people go to Atlantic City. You've talked about this with bookmakers before, right? That's when you start to see the public money come in as we get closer and closer to the game. I would expect there's not going to be much Denver appetite here, right? Like, I just don't see many people saying, I want to throw $100 on Jared Stidham and the Broncos against Drake May and the Patriots.
I just always do keep on, soccer players talk about it all the time. The altitude is a real thing, and that second half is a real thing. So I hate the game, being completely honest, and I love Drake May, but I hate the game, hate everything about it. Feel bad for Bo Nix. Can't stand Sean Payton. I think I might have to be backing him, though.
Yeah.
I want the Patriots to win because I think it's a better story, obviously, Super Bowl-wise.
100%.
Easy. Let's get to the game that is, this is not a good game. This is a great game.
All the juice. All the juice.
Every ounce of juice that could be squeezed from a freaking lemon. Because you do have, it's so interesting, too, with the dichotomy. The best young offensive mind, the best young defensive mind. A great defense. How hurt is Stafford? This opened 1.5 and Seattle got crushed. Got bet up to 2.5. And I do see Pinnacle laying a 3, which is a very sharp offshore book with Seattle.
Fascinating to me here. If Stafford was 100% healthy, the Rams are the better football team. I bet the Rams on that Thursday night game where they lost in overtime on the 2-point conversion from Seattle, one of the luckiest wins you're going to see in any regular season game. The 2-point conversion that was a backward pass that got tipped forward, but then and then you have the kick return, the punt return when the game was essentially over. Stafford misses some guys in the third quarter, fourth quarter, and overtime. Like, the Rams were the better football team in that game, and Stafford outplayed Sam Darnold for the majority of that game. Sam Darnold has played 7 bad quarters against the Rams, played a very good fourth quarter and a very good overtime against them. 100% Stafford, this is just, I'm slamming the Rams. I need to decide and where I feel that percentage lies. Is he 80%? Is he 90%? Does the extra week help his finger? Like, in the fact that we don't know, is it broken? Is it not broken? We haven't gotten anything from the Rams. Makes it a lot harder to kind of decide on that handicap.
Agree with every, I'm like the market. I've been obsessed with the Rams all year. So I don't think you're going to see, Pinnacle is showing 3, which is interesting. If it's 3, I do really like the Rams. You know, it's fascinating. By the time we get here on Thursday on Chart Money, where this number sits, both numbers.
Yeah, I mean, even on DraftKings right now, it's Seahawks -2.5, -120. Rams
so
+2.5, +100. Like, you're going to get threes. And I think that if you're out there, you're listening to this, you probably are a better someone who wants to get money down on these games. You got to make a decision now. Do you want Rams +3? Because it may not last long. So if it does pop and you want it, you've got to make that decision before it shows up.
I don't think you're getting a 3.5 if you're a Rams backer.
No, it's never going 3.5.
The late money is going to be Rams.
The problem with 3.5 here is the books have already laid 1.5, 2, and 2.5 to sharp bettors. So if you go to 3.5, you are setting yourself up for a middle if you're the books, and you're going to get bets from the biggest limit guys who have already bet limit bets on Seattle. So I would be shocked if it ever got to that 3.5 point. Because A, you get buyback, and B, you're leaving yourself way too exposed to a 3.
And like you said about the Patriots, I think all late money is going to be New England and Los Angeles.
I think the Rams are going to catch a lot of late money. We saw late money on the Rams against the Bears. That got to 3.5 and then got pounded about an hour before kickoff. Kicked at 4.5 in some places. So I think we're going to see late Rams money here as well. Total's a little interesting at 47.5. We saw both these offenses have a lot of success last time they played each other. That one, I'm going to want to look at the weather and see what we got in Seattle, because that does feel like it. If you believe in Darnold, that feels like it's more of an over than an under, because this Rams offense has shown they can move the football against the Seahawks.
We'll have these baked numbers on Sharp Money's Thursday edition. We're getting ready for Big Game 60 at VSiN with a deal to match. Save $60 off the VSiN Pro annual subscription when you sign up using the promo code SHARP. It's very easy to find. You get everything, including those AI-powered prop tools, which were great over the weekend, daily best bets from VSiN hosts and guests, real-time DraftKings and Circa, public Sharp books to show you where the money's going. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe. Use the promo code SHARP to save $60 off the VSiN Pro annual subscription today. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Anything else?
I got to give you props on calling the Bills head coaching firing.
I can't really take it because I just thought it was so common. It was just common sense. You can't continue to run it back.
Yes, I think McDermott had to go. Can you explain to me why Bean got promoted and not fired as well?
he obviously has a tremendous, we don't know what the Pakulas who own the team obviously very much like Bean.
I don't like. Isn't it the roster his fault?
He was
the GM, and now he's promoted.
He's been there forever too.
He's getting promoted. This wide receiving core is his fault. He's getting promoted. Like to me, you had to go GM coach if you're going coach, because it was as much the GM's fault as the coach's. And to see the coach get fired and the GM promoted is. A surprise.
Hey, listen, 9 years, you had your chance, McDermott. You've blown every fourth quarter lead in the postseason you've ever had. What I would say is he better hope he gets a head coaching job, because who's going to hire him to be a specialized defensive coordinator in a big spot his defense always failed?
Do Harbaugh or Stefanski regret their decision?
In what? Not taking Buffalo?
Not waiting for Buffalo.
I don't know. The pressure is immense, and no offense to Buffalo, you got to play up there. I wouldn't want to do that. But how about you?
Yeah, dumb decision. I would much rather be
You'd
in
rather
Buffalo.
Buffalo.
Yeah, Stefanski should have waited for Buffalo, because once Harbaugh made the decision to go to the Giants, Stefanski became the bell of the ball.
See, I think Stefanski in Atlanta is going to cook.
Who's their quarterback? Do you think Penix is good?
I don't hate Penix. The injuries are, you just can't, there's no
you
way
know,
to solve them.
I believe it was a podcast I love listening to. And one of the co-hosts, I think it was last week, went through the coaches and quarterbacks and how it's important to have a coach and a quarterback to be able to win. Yeah, here you are.
I think Stefanski went there with the concept that Penix wasn't going to be the answer, but they have young talent on defense. You got two greats on offense, and there's no pressure in Atlanta. And he's got a special relationship with Matt Ryan. That's why I think he went there.
Or you could have the best quarterback in football right now.
Yeah, and you have to win a Super. The stake is planted. It's Super Bowl or bust in both Baltimore and Buffalo. I think that's a tough place to walk into. I do appreciate what you're saying. You're getting an all-timer in Allen.
Who do you think gets the Buffalo job?
It's a great question.
I don't even know who, like. I don't know.
I don't really have an answer.
I mean, does Tomlin take it? Is that who Buffalo?
No, Tomlin's going to sit out. I don't know if Tomlin's going to coach next year.
Well, he was going to sit out before the Buffalo job became open. Mike McCarthy's getting buzz. You got the Dan Shula's getting buzz.
They just went defensive mind with McDermott. I think it's going to be more offensive mind. You generally organizations flip the philosophy from one coach to the next.
Brian Daboll's name was out there today for the Buffalo job.
Well, he was up there and he did have a relationship. You know what? That's not a terrible guess.
I mean,
I mean that.
I know you mean that, but that's what I'm like. That's an issue, though. That's why Stefanski was the right hire.
Yeah, true.
Mike McDaniels. Like,
yeah, McDaniels is getting some tremendous buzz.
He wouldn't be bad in Buffalo.
No, like, wouldn't be bad. I would agree with that. All right, we're over our time. But
yeah, I know. It was fun.
There's so much. We'll be back on Thursday to discuss it. Enjoy your time with your wife. And again, everybody, don't forget the newsletter as well. It's free. VSiN.com/newsletter. Enter your email address. No obligation. Samo, we got an A+ NFC. We've got a D because, that's all. No offense to Patriot or Denver fans. I mean, everybody would agree. It's a dud.
It is. It's not wonderful. And our four quarterbacks, Matthew Stafford, Sam Darnold, Jared Stidham, Drake May. If you had that before the season started, I hope you had a big old ticket on it.
These numbers are going to bake. Where will they be on Thursday? We'll find out. Sharp Money.